It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff. And today we have a special guest, Daniel Harmon, who is running in our county's upcoming sheriff's election. And not only that, but I think we're going to get a great opportunity today to talk with Daniel, not only just about, you know, things going on in our county, but I think people are, you know, kind of facing these issues across their small towns, wherever that may be across the nation, of maybe things like immigration, gun control, body cameras, stuff that we've all kind of been given the insight to and maybe have some concerns over. And Daniel, welcome to the show.
Well, I appreciate you having me on this morning.
Thank Absolutely. You. And Daniel, maybe you could give us maybe just a little insight into your story, where you come from.
Okay, so I was born in Toledo, Ohio. I lived there for my first 7 years, moved to Illinois until age 14, moved back to Hancock County at age 14, and been here since then. So 40 years, 40 plus years in Hancock County. Grew up with my two brothers. I have my mom and dad, Dave and Bonnie. Unfortunately, my dad passed away in May, so my mom is still here in Hancock County in Arlington. Been married for, we're coming up on 33 years in June. Been with my wife for 37 years, so.
Good deal. She's put up with you for a long time.
Out of the 40 years I've been in Hancock County, she has been with me all but three, so.
Awesome. So obviously you've been here a long time. I think you have a pretty sound understanding, especially in your line of work, of the residents that live here and kind of how things operate, right?
Yes.
What would you say when you were growing up, what made you want to get into public service or helping others?
So I've always been that type of person that has wanted to help people. One of the things I learned as a very younger age, it was always better to give than receive. And I think that's where I've picked that up, is I give to the community. I don't like to receive things. I don't like to receive notoriety. I'm just the person that would rather give off his back. Even when I can't really afford to do it, I still do it, or I give my services. And I think that's really what drove that in me. My family is a very caring family. My mom was a nurse for 40 years, so I get that compassion and empathy from her.
Sure.
And dad was an electrical engineer, so I get the analytical side from him.
Very good. So you got a nice, fair, and balanced approach then.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, I was kind of, you know, reading some of your stuff on your sheriff's page, and I mean, you have a list of accreditations taller than I am, as far as not only just in, I would say, the work of law enforcement, but you've got some fire department experience, some search and rescue. You want to talk a little bit about that, some of the different accreditations you have?
So over the years, you know, I started off, actually my first volunteer job or first responder job was with the Allen Township Fire Department. After that, I got hired at the sheriff's office as a diver and then a corrections officer. Those two jobs or three jobs of EMS, fire department, and law enforcement have coexisted for over 25 years, and I've actually been in law enforcement for 31 years. I train. I love to train. I love to learn new things. One of the best courses I've ever taken was the paramedicine course at MCO, which is Medical College of Ohio, which is now UTMC. That one really opened my eyes to a lot of things that helped me in my law enforcement career, because everything that we do in first responder bounces off of each other. You know, you can't just rely on just police knowledge. You have to rely on EMS knowledge. You have to rely on fire knowledge. You have to rely on hazmat knowledge.
Sure.
To be that well-rounded person, and that well-rounded is what was my goals. And I believe I achieved that through all the certifications I've got.
Sure. And obviously, as you just described, everyone you just encompassed is a part of the first responders, right? So,
yes.
I mean, being able to have a little bit of knowledge coming from all different directions is obviously a very well-rounded scope of being able to maybe attack the problem when you first get there and not necessarily have to wait for the next first responder to come and deliver the knowledge that you don't have.
That's correct. Like I said, and it's a team effort. Everything that we do in this community for first responders is a team effort. And having that knowledge of what the other team is doing is great, or what the other players are doing is great. And then also, you know, being able to work with them and knowing what their capabilities and what their resources are helps me assess the situation better and knows what I need to get.
Sure. Creates great camaraderie.
Yes.
Now, you know, you just described you have these characteristics of wanting to help others, wanting to serve others, even at the expense of yourself sometimes. Where would you say that comes from? Where do you get those principles from?
So I get those principles from my parents, my mom especially. And then, you know, when I moved here in 14, my mom and dad weren't necessarily going to a church per se. We didn't have a church, home church, when we moved here. at the age of 14, I took it upon myself to go look for a church. When you look at the teachings of Jesus Christ, it is about serving others and serving your fellow man. That's where it's really been instilled on me, and learning that through churches and learning that through scripture. Some people would say, well, what's Christianity have to do with you being in law enforcement or first being a first responder? It has everything to do with it. That's what made me a better police officer. That's what made me have an understanding of what folks were going through. It wasn't just going out and making arrests. It wasn't going out and just enforcing law. It was actually making that community connection and making that connection with that person in hopes that we could give them hope and an idea that somebody actually cares for them, that they don't ever recidivize. We want to keep people out of jail. There's a lot of times where it's not always they're necessarily their choice. Ultimately, yes, but we have to look at other underlying situations. And I think, like I said, the way I believe in that Christ leads us is to accept a person. We don't necessarily accept what they're doing and we hold them accountable, but we can just accept that person. And if we can accept that person and say, what can I do to help you, bring you up, give you the hope, give you the grace, that helps them. And, you know, I've shared many a tear with folks that I've arrested. A lot of them are regretful of what they've done. Hmm. And that is an opportunity for us to show, here's your support, let's get you help.
So in other words, what you're saying is you are trying to give people that second chance.
Yeah, so a second chance. I want to bring more faith-based programs to the jail. You know, we can throw medications at people. We can throw some services at them. But if that doesn't give them a hope or give them a reason for existing, then it doesn't stick.
Sure. We're numbing the problem rather than actually nullifying it.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good.
Well, again, welcome to our $1 million studio at Trump Tower. I'm so glad you were able to make the stand. So help us get to know you like this way. Like, what's your favorite food, favorite movie to watch? You know, maybe from a kid to now, you know, or even TV show, favorite memory with your kids, some of those things.
So I am a very family-oriented person. So I have thousands and thousands and thousands of memories with my family. I am an outdoors type person. I'm not a sit at home and watch TV. I don't read books a lot unless I'm studying for the stuff that I'm going to school for. But as far as that, I'm an outdoors person. I love to garden. I have a 1951 John Deere B tractor I tinker around on.
Nice.
I have a garden that I'm currently going through a master gardener's class because it's something that I enjoy. I love bringing back old traditions. So I've took a 10-week blacksmithing class, so I can blacksmith now. I'm learning how to weld on my own. Beekeeping. You know, my mama raised bees, so I'm in the beekeeping. Like I said, anything outdoors I love to do. Favorite memories with my kids. Every second of the waking day that I'm with my kids is my favorite. And I will tell you that my wife is the love of my life, and we cherish each other. And you know, it's a partnership and a friendship that I could never, ever replace. So that's a little bit about me personally.
You know, by your own description, it sounds like you're living a pretty good life. You're pretty comfortable. Things are going good for you. This isn't something you necessarily have to take on as far as running for the sheriff, but you've still decided to do so anyways. I guess what gives you that drive? What gives you that passion to want to take this position?
You know, people look at the sheriff and everybody is saying, well, that's the most powerful person in the county. Well, you know what? The most powerful people in the county are the people. One of my passions is to take an office like that and give it back to the people.
Mm.
We have seen way too many government agencies and government officials get elected and they forget where they come from. That's one of the things that I never did when I got promoted to sergeant at the police department. I never forgot where I came from. I always treated the officers the same.
Sure.
You know, because I was there. I did that job. So, and to forget where you come from once you get in the elected position is, one, it's very harmful to the community. It's harmful to our governmental agencies, and it looks bad. So, you know, one of the things that I have a passion for is this community. To take this position is a position of responsibility that I take very seriously. If I'm elected, it would be to help empower the deputies to have the knowledge and the experience to do the job properly and serve the community to the best of their abilities, and to make sure that I am serving the community. You know, we always hear that open door policy. On my website for a campaign, on my brochures for campaign, that has my personal cell phone number. everybody in this county has that. To me, like I said, I feel like I've put myself out there and made myself vulnerable. And I think you need to remain vulnerable in there. You don't become this all-powerful person once you get elected. You still have to be a person that lives here and resides here, and you have to respect people's opinions, whether you agree with them or not.
On that note, you've got this double-edged sword of public office or public service, and you're in both, really. So you've got, of course, those who want to affirm you, and then you've got the trolls, and they're everywhere. Anybody who ever takes a stand on any issue is going to encounter opposition. You're no exception. So I notice online the Courier has a comment section. Somebody threw some mud on you, or tried to, and they said that you threw a temper tantrum over this camera issue that we're seeing that's happening throughout our nation, where they're trying to provide accountability. What are your thoughts on that? And maybe this time we can kind of silence this one troll.
We need accountability. It not only holds us accountability as law enforcement officers, it holds us accountability to the community too. So when you're making false accusations against law enforcement, I can disprove that. I can also prove that if there is a legitimate accusation against law enforcement, that we can address that. One of my biggest concerns is of the cameras is when we just have a body camera that shows very limited amounts of what's going on. I prefer to have a body camera and something that gives a better point of view. So I'm not going to just go out there and purchase the first body camera out there. It has to be researched. It has to be something that shows the full evidence. It can't be something that just shows a little bit here, a little bit there. So body camera that gives a great point of view, weapons camera, because once we pull a weapon, that obscures our visuality of what's going on, and then a car camera. So I want to have three points of view. So I want more body cameras. So that kind of surprises me. So I'm
sure. Now, in terms of body cameras, are these something that would work in a sense of these are activated when a law enforcement officer is dispatched? Do they run all day long? Like how do these things actually work?
So most of them work. They have a manual turn on. Now the car cameras, some are hooked to the lights in the siren box. So when you flip on your lights, they automatically come on.
Okay.
Most cameras are activated by the officer, but the policies usually are if you're going to have an interaction with the community, you must have it on. So they run a lot, but if you're just in driving around in your car, they're not on.
Okay. Because I get the kind of argument of pushback of you got a camera on you all day. Like maybe you want to call your wife and have a personal conversation, or I mean, nobody wants to be watched all day long, right?
Right.
So I think it makes sense as you're describing when you're engaged with the community. I think it makes sense for all parties involved because it is protecting you, it's protecting them. And then I also understand the, like I said, the fact of ultimately people deserve some privacy and they don't need to be recorded all day long when they're doing nothing more than driving around in their car.
Right. I'm sure you probably don't want to listen to the music that I listen to when I'm driving in the car. So, you know, because I like the Christian music, and I'm the only one that had to change that in the car. So
do you sing out loud?
I do. So so if people see me driving around in a cruiser and they think I'm talking to myself, I'm actually singing. So I apologize to that, but it's good that I have my windows up.
Suppose we're in Texas. We're watching this whole debacle, this impossible situation with the governor and the government. What could you do as a sheriff to come alongside that governor, or if you would, the federal government, whichever one you're going to side with, what could you do to help ensure that our Constitution and Bill of Rights are not violated?
So that's an excellent question. Again, this is one of those ones that has been recently, and I've looked to the Bible on this to get the answers. Does the Bible say that we're not allowed to have borders? No, it does not. Does it say that we don't have laws? No, it does not. The laws of government are to be followed as long as they meet the laws of God and nature. So, with that being said, immigration is a law. You know, unfortunately, the federal government has decided not to enforce their own laws that they have created. Immigration and naturalization is a federal law that is enforced at the federal level. But that being said, does not mean that I cannot protect my community against immigrants that are here to cause us harm. There is nobody that I think would stand here and say if an immigrant is here seeking asylum or seeking help, that we're not going to reach out to those folks and help them. If you're here to cause us harm and to create hate and discontent and break laws, then I will enforce those laws as prescribed by the state of Ohio, the U.S. Constitution, and Ohio Constitution.
I think, too, what really, I know we gave the metaphoric heat zone here being Texas, but this is I think there's almost been such a flood of people coming through the border due to the fact it's wide open that I think almost in some ways every town has the potential to be a border town, right? Because so many of these people are being flown or shipped via bus through all parts of the country. So I think this is an issue we may see from, you know, sheriffs here, sheriffs pretty much, like I said, across the nation.
So when Governor Abbott is sending folks to New York, how far away is New York from us? Five hours from here. Again, I don't believe that we should be a sanctuary city for folks that are here illegally. There is a process,
amen,
to get into this country. You know, we're one of the very few countries that we have more of an open process for immigration than anywhere else. I read this someplace that you said if you want to immigrate to Canada, you have to have a job and references before you can, you know. So we love immigrants, but people that come here in a legal fashion. So there's no reason, and the folks that are coming here in droves, that's not legal immigration. That, you know, they I'll say it, it's an invasion. You know, we need to close the borders. We need to do better than what we're doing, and that's the federal government. So we need to elect people that are going to our federal government that say, enough is enough, we need to stop. We have to protect our borders. Nobody's saying stop immigration. Nobody. I've never heard anybody say stop, and they're saying stop illegal immigration.
We're saying stop invasion.
And, you know, and of course, you know, now the popular word is undocumented immigrant. Come up with whatever play on words you want to. It's still illegal. You still have crossed the border without the proper procedures.
Due process. So, you know, we all care about people. We are compassionate. We are sympathetic. However, you've got to consider this. If you'll commit a felony or worse just to get in this country, you're not probably going to stop committing crimes to stay or to secure a means to survive, right?
So that's correct. I mean, granted, like I said, I don't want to put a broad label across everybody because, you know, there are some people that are coming across the border that are seeking help, but they're doing it in the wrong way. We are very compassionate, and we don't have to have open borders to be compassionate. Again, it's a biblical thing that we're allowed to have borders. We're allowed to have laws. We're allowed to control immigration. So to just say, oh, open the doors, here we go. No, that's not right. So I work in the trenches with mental health, homelessness, and where are we taking that money and where are we helping the folks that are here? You know, it's not being selfish. You're on an airplane. The oxygen mask comes down. Who takes care of the oxygen mask first? It's the person that's most capable of helping the other persons first. So it's not the women and children that get the oxygen mask. It's not the child. It's the person that is most capable of taking care of them. So if we're not taking care of ourselves and we're making ourselves stronger, how are we going to open our borders to people we can't even take care of? You know, we're spending billions of dollars way above what we should be, and we can't even educate our own citizens. We can't keep the homeless out. We can't take care of our veterans. The mental health, I'm telling you right now, we do not apply the monies that we need to do to mental health that we should. And if I had all the money that we were spending on illegal aliens or people coming to this country illegally on mental health, we could resolve a lot of issues.
Sure.
A lot of issues.
I think maybe best analogizing the fact of how are you going to help somebody else put their house in order if your own house isn't in order? I mean, even like you just said, all the money we spend in other countries in foreign wars, and we refuse to take care of what's in our own backyard. And I completely agree with you in the fact that if we were truly allocating the resources that we disperse everywhere else to right here, we would see a much better scenario playing out, I believe, as a country as a whole.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, and then when we're that great or where we're that more healthy and as a country, then I guess what? You probably could bring in a little bit more immigration because now you're a healthy country that provides jobs, provides those services to those folks. But we can't even provide it to our own country, our own citizens. So until then, and I agree with you, Tyler, 100%. If we're not taking care of our own house, how can we take care of others?
Sure.
So I agree with that 100%.
what's your thoughts on gun control in itself? And, you know, maybe if there's some ways that things could be done better, or if you think, you know, things are good as they are, what's your thoughts?
So my thoughts on gun control are, I don't like gun control. Gun control is education. That's where the gun control starts coming. You know, when I grew up, my uncles, they put a firearm in my hand at age 5. They, first of all, explained to me what the firearm was, how to use it, how to clean it, make sure it's safe, where to point it. All that stuff was taught to me as a young child. Where we have that difference today is there's such a difference in the society that training is not getting out there to the people that are buying firearms.
Sure.
So my idea of guns is be a responsible gun owner. You know, if you have a buddy that's looking to go buy a firearm, go with them. If you have knowledge of the firearm, go with them. Teach them. Don't just go, hey, that's the coolest gun on the market. You know, that's the thing to buy. Go with them. Help them. Explain to them what that is. Get them on a gun range. Make them comfortable. You know, I've talked to so many people that have taken like the CCW class. They don't feel comfortable just out of that training. They feel, they're like, oh, I know just enough to make myself dangerous. You know, education. You know, I'm a big firm believer of responsible gun ownership. So when I'm not at home, my firearms are secured. Just for the fact that I'm not at home and I don't want somebody unauthorized to get them. Where we're running into issues is we need to educate our firearms owners that the old days of putting your display and your guns in a gun case might not be a great idea anymore because people are breaking in your homes and taking your firearms and then they're using them against us law-abiding citizens.
Sure. I remember even back in the day, not so long ago, you'd have people driving around with their gun in the back rack of their truck.
So and that's another thing that we're talking about when people are talking about gun control. What in the society changed from the day where we had firearms in the back of our pickup trucks going to school? Right. Mm-hmm. Going to school. And nothing ever happened. I don't remember anybody getting shot or even anybody taking out their gun during, you know, back then it was a fist fight was a fist fight. But we're talking in society, and this is my opinion, that the heart has changed.
Mm.
The value of life has changed.
100%.
So that is another education point that we have to get across to these young kids, to everybody. It's a firearm is a tool. It can be misused just as much as an axe.
Sure.
But if we educate people on value of life and making sure that we're taking care of each other, in the Second Amendment, people get this wrong all the time. And that amendment was created by men that just went through a hard-fought war from a tyrannical government,
yep.
And they knew that they had to have something in there to place for the citizens to prevent a tyrannical government from happening in the United States.
Yep. I think the Second Amendment serves well to protect the First Amendment, right?
The Second Amendment serves well to protect all the amendments
and
the United States Constitution and our freedoms.
I would completely agree. And I think I also entirely agree with you in the terms of that. The hearts of people have changed. And I think when you look at just anywhere in society, there has been a concerted effort to, I think, change people's hearts all the way from the time I remember being, you know, a littler kid, probably like 11, 12 years old. And there was just shooting video games everywhere. I mean, you pick up, you know, you're constantly just killing people, but it's in a game, right? So they just come right back to life again. You've entirely lost the value of life, and you've over and over again shot somebody on a screen with no repercussion and no negative outcome. So I think sometimes when that's taken into the real world, those thoughts are still kept. Well, I have a dispute with you. I'm just going to shoot you.
Yep.
And I mean, obviously, it's incredibly dangerous for everyone. You're exactly right that people's hearts have been changed, and not for the better.
In regards to video games, like I said, my son and I argue about this because he's kind of a video gamer. But I explained to him, I said, Nate, you're one of the ones that might not be susceptible to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are folks that are susceptible to that violence, and they don't understand it. And I will tell you that anything that we do changes our brain chemistry. When we're watching video games all day long, that changes our brain chemistry. And the whole idea of our brains and the way God made us was when we have a change, we're able to either regulate that or we have to have something from the outside that helps regulate that. But when we're having those constant barrages of kill, kill, kill,
mm-hmm.
then that changes that mental health outlook of what's going on.
100%. And that's also not even taking into account all the psychoactive drugs that are being used, all of the pornography, and I mean, things are just rampant that I feel like they all kind of pile on each other. I completely agree with you also that maybe for your son specifically, it sounds as though, you know, he had a great upbringing, a good home life. So he's getting the counterbalance to maybe what he plays for an hour a day, to where some people don't get that counterbalance. And that's all they consume is that violence and that destruction, no matter in which way it may be. Maybe it's from TV, maybe from video games, whatever. But there's no counterbalance to say, like, well, you know, that's just fantasy. That's not how we live real life.
Well, and Jeff is a little bit towards my age, and you know, there was people that were raised by the TV back in our day, and now people are being raised by video games. So,
we need to have
the nuclear family back.
What I think most of us, at least Christian believers, right? We understand that we used to be a Christian nation. I think Obama got it right. We are no more. That has played a role in the values and how we treat each other. But you're absolutely right. Those video games are training mechanisms. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the military was one of the first ones to use it for such. It's a simulation of real scenarios that can occur, but it desensitizes you and teaches you to be reactive in this way without emotion. It's just a reflex. And that's dangerous for children. That's dangerous.
In closing, I had one more question, and then I have something I wanted Jeff to read. Can you think of a time in your life that maybe you came to a real crossroads and that your faith carried you through to perseverance?
Okay, so I'm going to try to do this without becoming emotional. So there is a time where we had a little bit of a family issue. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds.
Sure.
But I wasn't a big drinker. I wasn't what I would consider an alcoholic, where I was going out and it would affect my job. But there was a time where I had taken off to go to Kentucky into the woods, and I had maybe a couple cases of alcohol with me. and so I'm up on this mountain in the middle of nowhere. I have my campsite set. I have my brews of choice to take part of. I have one sip and it stopped. So I try not to get choked up here. God put it in my heart there, said, Dan, that's not the answer. That's not the answer. I'm your answer.
Mm.
So again, I get very emotional about this. And so next morning I clean up. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. So I clean up. I drive into a church and I partake in church. And we all go through struggles where sometimes we lose faith. But that made it in concrete that God is there for you.
So that was really your maybe come to Jesus moment per se, true acknowledgement.
So it was where I felt that I had the closest and most personal relationship with God. You know, we always try to live, and we're sinful people.
Sure.
But that was wow. You know, I get choked up about that, because that is where I said, God said, I love you. I'm here for you. Go find a church.
That's awesome, brother. I gave me the God bumps. I like it. And in closing, Jeff, if you want to pull up, I was kind of, before I really got to ever meet you, looking just through your Facebook, just kind of, you know, getting to learn a little bit about you. And I came across this post from, it was sometime in 2023, that you wrote. And I screen grabbed it because I thought, you know what, this post just perfectly encapsulates who this guy is.
Yeah, I'll read it to you. As I pray this morning, I know that not all of my friends and loved ones are believers. That does not mean that I love you any less. Our faith is a personal relationship with God. God does not force us to be faithful and believe, neither should I. My faith has taught me to love my fellow man no matter their circumstances. I will continue to pray for our country, community, and peace in the world. I will continue to seek guidance from my Lord and Savior to serve my brothers and sisters to the best of my ability, even if that means to lay down my life so others may live. So here's my prayer. Lord, please use me today in any way you see fit. As you guide my thoughts and actions, please use me to bless others and for your purposes more broadly. Rather than seeking my own will, help me to align with yours. Thank you, God, for all you do for me. In Jesus' precious name, amen. Amen, man.
That's awesome. Beautiful, brother. Yes, it is. Thank you once again for joining us, and best of luck to you in the election. As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here, and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. Peace, love, and God bless. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. And remember, the eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
It's Blindly Obvious, baby.